Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, friends, fans, and neighbors. Good to have you with us for this latest edition of the Bill Press Pod and a book I'm really excited about. You know, I don't have to tell you how disgusting Donald Trump is and how much damage he's done and is still doing to our political system. But if there's anything more disgusting than Donald Trump, it's the gang of Republican leaders who line up every day to kiss his ass. You know who they are: Lindsey Graham, Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, Jim Jordan, Rudy Giuliani, Ted Cruz, Ron Johnson, Marco Rubio, Matt Gaetz, Mo Brooks, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the list goes on and on. All born without a backbone. All in a race every day to see how low they can crawl, how much they can debase themselves before the big orange clown. Not one of them is worthy of public office, and yet they're the leaders of what passes for the Republican Party today. You know, it's about time that somebody dropped the hammer on this band of phonies. And in his new book, Thank You for Your Servitude, Mark Leibovich does just that. You know, when it comes to documenting the behavior of Trump's chicken shit band of sycophants, Mark Leibovich, longtime New York Times political reporter, now with The Atlantic, shows no mercy. Mark Leibovich, so good to connect with you again, my friend. How are you? Everything good?
Good, Bill. Thanks. Yeah, everything's great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for your servitude. Thank you for exposing all of these monumental ass-kissers. I mean, it's a long list, Mark. Lindsey Graham, Kevin McCarthy, Mike Pompeo. I mean, Chris Christie, Rudy Giuliani, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz. They're just some of the ones you talk about. Where were these guys when God was giving out backbone?
You know, I think they were raising money for their re-elections or their elections. I don't know, man. Yeah. It's like, it's dispiriting. But like, my point here is that Donald Trump did not have to happen. I mean, I wanted to focus on the people who were complicit in the Republican Party and just sort of rolling over for him. And yeah, there's a pretty big and illustrious cast of characters here.
Well, of many takeaways, Mark, I enjoyed the book immensely, by the way.
Thank you.
I think that was your main takeaway, that it's not so much Donald Trump, it's the acolytes who made him happen and who keep him happening.
Right? Yes. Yes. I mean, that is, you have, as far as I'm concerned, you have identified the correct takeaway, Bill. It's I mean, look, Donald Trump is, I think, culpable enough for a lot of reasons, but I did not want to write a book that focused, you know, on Trump. I didn't, you know, I think there's been plenty out there about the Trump White House and all the outrages that went on. And I wasn't trying to find the killer anecdote where, you know, oh, there he is feeding dog food to Mike Pence in the Oval Office. And, you know, oh, wow, can you believe that scoop? No, I mean, I think the story of Washington, by and large, from the last 6-7 years has been the absolute dereliction of the Republican Party in stopping this. And, you know, the Mitch McConnell, Paul Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, they all got something out of the deal. I mean, they got their judges, they got their tax cut, they got to keep their jobs if they stayed on the right side of Dear Leader, and they did for the most part. Mm-hmm. They made it work for themselves, which is not a new Washington story. But you know, to me, it was like this rollicking kind of Sodom and Gomorrah of Washington, sort of sat at the Trump Hotel, and you know, we lived through it as people who operate and live in Washington, and it's been unlike anything I've ever seen, and it was not always pleasant, and so here we are. But I wanted to tell the story of that Washington, you know, again, focusing on the enablers, the ones who just allowed it to happen.
Right. Well, the one phrase that one of many that stuck with me from the book is, I think this was originally said about Mike Pompeo, mm-hmm. a heat-seeking missile for yes. Trump's ass.
Yes.
Now, this is a tough question, Mark, mm-hmm. but of the list that I originally read, Lindsey mm-hmm. Graham, Kevin McCarthy, Pompeo, Chris Christie, mm-hmm. who is the worst of the heat-seeking missiles or the worst of the ass-kissers, do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I guess by way of – well, first of all, I'm going to back up. I mean, Susan Glasser of The New Yorker is the originator of the quote from, I think, a State Department spokesperson who's described Mike Pompeo as a heat-seeking missile for Trump's ass. And, you know, my feeling is, you know, full credit to Susan for getting the quote, but my feeling is that that quote can never be uttered enough. So, and, you know, there were a whole party full of heat-seeking missiles for Trump's ass. And I can't get that image out of my mind, but he, but that, you know, it's a kind of a colorful quote. But it's also, it has been like the operating sort of principle of the Republican Party. I mean, humoring Donald Trump has been the you know, it's been the race to do that. So you ask, who is worse? Who is the worst heat seeker? The heat seeking head of states. I would say probably Kevin McCarthy. I would put him in a special category because he works so hard at it. But also he is so powerful. He's the head of the Republican caucus and he will probably be Speaker of the House. So that gives him kind of a alpha lapdog status.
You actually refer to him as a diamond level ass kisser.
Yes, I did. I mean, the thing about writing a book as opposed to writing for the New York Times is, you know, you can actually get away with some more colorful synonyms for like sycophant or something clinical like that. But one of the reasons I left the New York Times to go to the Atlantic is, you know, you can use profanity, but it was a real challenge after a while to find proper ways of saying this. And by the way, another credit is to and my favorite was the Brigade of Turd Polishers. pretty good. Charlie Sykes of the Bulwark came up with that. But no, McCarthy really worked at it. He's powerful. And so I would give him first among equal status among the ass kickers.
For those of our listeners who have not yet read the book, but we will put a link up so that all of our listeners can buy the book and read it and enjoy it as much as I did. Tell us about McCarthy. Maybe this is the one story that illustrates most how far he was willing to go. Tell us about the starbursts.
Yeah, this is sort of become a legend in the annals of Washington suck-uppery. Early on in Trump's term, McCarthy got on Air Force One, like, you know, people do. It's like they love riding in Air Force One with the president. And McCarthy noticed that Trump was eating Starburst, the pleasing fruit candy, and he only liked the pink ones and the red ones. He would discard the yellow ones and the orange ones. You know, as a personal aside, I personally love the orange and the yellow ones and prefer them to the red ones, but no one really cares about my tastes here. But so McCarthy took note of this, and being the, you know, attention to detail, diamond level ass kisser that he is, he arranged to have a whole gift basket or gift jar of Starburst sent over to the White House with the yellows and the oranges already removed. I don't know who the staff person who did that is, or if that person is actually on the taxpayers'
dime. Probably.
Yeah, good use of your tax dollars. So he had the reds and the pinks sent over, and the president was apparently very moved by the gesture, loved the attention to detail, and that became a real calling card in what Kevin McCarthy was willing to do to ingratiate himself to Donald Trump.
My Kevin, right. My Kevin. Yeah.
A term of ownership as much as of affection.
But particularly a chicken shit when right on January 6th, for example, McCarthy was one of the first ones to go out and say, the president's responsible. And then those tapes came out, which of course he denied ever saying, but we had tapes in his voice saying, you know, I called him and I told him, and you got to stop this. You got to do something. And he told his members, we have to make sure he's held accountable. And then he goes down to Mar-a-Lago again.
Mm-hmm. 8 days after Trump left Washington, McCarthy, went and followed him like a heat-seeking missile for his ass. For some reason, thought that it wasn't going to get out. But of course, Trump had already alerted the press. There were helicopters sort of flying above them. And there's this picture of them all over social media. And they're both kind of sucking in their stomachs. And they're in like a wax museum room. I don't know.
Yeah.
In Mar-a-Lago. So I know you've probably spent a great deal of time there. No,
not invited,
yeah,
Mark.
Not invited. Yeah, me neither. But then he came back and was like, what? And people were like, what the hell? And like Liz Cheney was irate. And he said, oh, I was just in the neighborhood, which I thought was an incredibly funny answer. It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, wow. Hey, I'm like a few miles from Mar-a-Lago. Maybe I'll go stop in. And imagine him stopping at like an edible arrangements on the way over to get a gift basket, right. Maybe sprinkle in some Starbursts for his friend.
Well, you know, I would agree with you. Kevin McCarthy would be number one, but you must admit, he really had close competition with Lindsey Graham. I mean, the question, Mark, I get asked most often as these days is, what the hell ever happened to Tucker Carlson? I know you were asked so often, what happened to Lindsey Graham? I'll ask you again.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you go from being John McCain's best friend to Donald Trump's best friend?
You know, it's a great mystery. I asked him this explicitly, and he said, well, I just, you know, anyone who knows me knows I want to be relevant. I want to be at the dice table, meaning, if you don't want to be reelected, you're in the wrong business. So, you know, I get that. It's, you know, it's crass, but it's what politicians do. But he takes it up so many notches. I mean, essentially, Lindsey Graham wants to be... He gets a real charge out of being in the mix. I mean, the idea that the president, you know, and he can be seen golfing together is not only very powerful and very effective for him politically in South Carolina, but it's cool. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes the only psychological explanation for these people is that they just think it's cool and they can't get enough of it. And the freebies and like the beautiful golf clubs and the pools and all the things. I mean, you know, it becomes addictive and it sounds kind of depressing because, you know, these are supposedly our leaders. But that drives him a great deal. And, you know, here we are. So he loves being the senator who has the closest relationship to Donald Trump.
And as you point out, though, he's just one of this group. Mm-hmm. The phrase you use is who were willing to discard every principle that they once held, right? So it's beyond being cool. It's really policies, principles don't matter, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, on one hand, I mean, they've gotten a lot of policy thing. I mean, like the judges. Let's just start with the judges. I mean, that is not
good
a small
point.
Thing, right?
Good point.
But you're right. Yep. But I mean, they discarded a lot. I mean, you know, again, just part of it's just self-respect and pride. And like your best friend is John McCain. I mean, like he trashed him to the grave and beyond. I mean, and believe me, McCain, this didn't, I learned there's a lot of this in the book that I didn't know before, but McCain was pissed. McCain and Lindsey at the end of McCain's life were not in a great place. And, you know, the last conversation I had with McCain before he died, he was like, where's everyone's self-respect? He wasn't talking explicitly about Lindsey. He was talking about his colleagues. And he said, you know, I'd like to think that if I weren't, you know, dying, actually, I would not be kissing his ass like this. I mean, it all comes down to self-respect. And, you know, say what you will about John McCain. I mean, he had a very, you know, kind of, you know, he's a complicated character, but he had a lot of self-respect. And when you are, when you've lived the life that he has, I mean, how can you not sort of act with a measure of pride and self-respect? But I think he was disgusted. And, you know, I think a lot of people were disgusted on John McCain's behalf at what Lindsey was willing to do, you know, in sort of sidling up to Donald Trump.
Well, we don't have time to go into each one of the member of the pack.
We need a lot of time, Bill. Yeah.
I want to ask you about one more, though, that I find intriguing. And that's Chris Christie. I mean, look, I read Christie's book. Donald Trump dumped on Chris Christie in every possible way. He wouldn't make him attorney general. He wouldn't make him secretary of state, even though Chris Christie, you know, stood behind him in the campaign at all those news conferences. And Donald Trump made fun of him, called him fatso and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then Chris Christie sticks with him. Then he breaks and he becomes his commentator on ABC. But as you point out, I'll let you tell it, in your last interview with him, you yeah. ask him, okay, are you done with Donald Trump? Would you ever vote for him? You would never vote for him again, would yeah. you? And Chris Christie, go ahead.
He said, that's a hypothetical. I won't answer it. I couldn't believe that. Thank you for identifying that, by the way, Bill. No one's picked up on that. But no, that was amazing. I mean, Christie is a man. I mean, the thing about Christie is he was, when he was governor of New Jersey, he just like was like, hey, you know, there are two ways yeah. to deal with a bully. You got to punch him in the face or right. you can sidle up to him. And then, like, you know, apparently, you know, the only person who, Chris Christie would sidle up to is not the tough guy from Jersey, but the sort of guy from with the dyed orange hair from Queens, right? The drama queen. So yeah, a bizarre character. I mean, I would hope that, you know, again, it gets down to self-respect, but I mean, he's obviously worried about pissing off Trump even at this late date.
Right. So you might understand why they did what they did while Trump was in the White House, getting elected, even though all of them really dumped on him while he as right. a candidate, and were just hoping yeah. he would go away or yeah. or crash and burn. So maybe you can understand while he was in the White House, why still today, Mark? Yeah. What's your read? These people are still loyal to Donald Trump, yeah. right?
I think a lot of it's inertia. A lot of it is path of least resistance. I think, frankly, they're scared. I mean, Trump. Still has a very passionate following, and that's a lot of the Republican base, and they need the base to not be threatening them and not be harassing them and not be harassing their families and voting for them if they run again. I mean, it's all very self-interested, and a lot of it is like, you know, again, it's kind of thuggery. It's like, I don't need this level of siege in my life. I'm scared, you know, and, you know, you could say, well, you know, you did sign up for this. This is, you know, you're supposed to be our leaders, but no, I mean, I think a lot of it's just like, it gets down to basic weakness and not having the stomach to actually fight, you know, against someone they all know to be not good for the country and a real problem, especially for the Republican Party, but possibly everyone's problem again.
Well, at several points in the book, you talk about the, I said lame defenses, you know, that they come up with, right? Well, he's going to pivot someday, right? What's the harm in humoring him, right?
Or classic quote.
He'll go away someday. Or the classic, I don't care. I don't care, right?
Yeah, that was a big Lindsay thing. Yeah, I mean, that was another thing. I mean, you would sort of ask them, you know, they would all get questions, variations on, do you worry about the verdict of history? Do you worry about how your grandchildren will remember you? I mean, they'll look back on this time and they'll say, aha, you know, Rudy Giuliani lied for Trump. He was a chief enabler. And Giuliani himself would say, you know, screw it or fuck it. Can I say that on this show? Yeah.
You said it.
I said it. Sorry. You can beat me out if you want. But I'll be dead. Actually, Rudy said it. I blame him. I'll be dead. I mean, Trump himself said, I don't care about my legacy. If I lose this election, that will be my legacy. Lindsay himself said, you know, I don't care. I just don't care. I don't care. I won't be here. McCarthy looked at me like I had three heads when I asked him a legacy question. So, you know, they put blinders on and, you know, if they can, I mean, McCarthy has convinced himself that if he can be elected Speaker of the House, everything else will be redeemed and it'll be worth it to him. And it's depressing as all hell to hear, but that's how they sort of get through their days. And who knows, it might work for them in the short term and it might get them, you know, fancy job titles, but, you know, it doesn't have to be uplifting.
Is it fair to compare what we see in the Republican Party today to a cult?
You know, I've heard that. You certainly hear that a lot. You know, I don't pretend to understand the psychology of cults, but there's something, there is something to be said for just sort of throwing in with a big charismatic leader that is deeply imperfect and, you know, you certainly hear it. And, you know, based on the very limited knowledge I have of cults, I mean, there certainly seem to be some commonalities. And it's certainly hard to talk some people out of this once they're all in with Trump. So, it could be something to it.
As you point out, Congressman Jamie Raskin has sort of become an expert in cults, right? And he sees a lot of analogies to.
Yeah, absolutely.
The big question is, if it's a religious cult, why Donald Trump, right, is ahead of it? But
yeah. No, it's true. I mean, it's I mean, you know, he is sort of like he's a weird, eccentric, charismatic leader, I guess, I don't find him charismatic, but I can see how some might, maybe. So I don't know. I mean, I remember Barack Obama was asked about him a few years ago by, you know, my colleague Jeff Goldberg at The Atlantic, and he said, you know, I kind of knew that populism could take hold in the Republican Party, but I didn't think it would be someone this unappealing, or something to that effect. And it is bizarre. I mean, like, of all the characters to like have such a following.
Right. Not exactly a Mother Teresa type.
No.
Mark Leibovich, our guest today on the Bill Press Pod Dynamite new book called Thank You for Your Servitude, Donald Trump's Washington and the Price of Submission. Mark, lots more to talk about. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back and pick up with some of the other characters that you talk about in the book. Today's podcast with Mark Leibovich, brought to you by the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, the great men and women of the UFCW under President Mark Perrone. They're the great people who serve us so well in our big retail stores like Macy's and Nordstrom's, big grocery chains, Safeway and Stop and Shop and all the rest. Our chemical plants, meat processing plants, cannabis plants. The members of the UFCW on the job. We salute them for their good work. Thank them for their ongoing support of the Bill Press Pod. Check out their website at ufcw.org. You'll be impressed with all the great causes that they're fighting for together.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back on the Bill Press Pod with Mark Leibovich, his book, Thank You for Your Servitude, a blistering look at all the sycophants or ass kissers who surrounded Donald Trump, Lindsey Graham, Kevin McCarthy, Mike Pompeo, and all the rest. Mark, what's your take? Here's another character, difficult to figure out, Mike Pence. Mm. You know, 5 years, he was the ultimate ass kisser, right?
Yes,
and then a major break, saving our republic, perhaps. But has he really gone that far from Donald Trump? How do we read him? How do you read him?
Oh, boy. Pence. I mean, where to begin with Pence? I mean, first of all, I mean, he is a classic kind of deputy dog, like lap dog, right?
Total.
I mean, even the style, like the bowed head, the hushed voice, referring to him as my president. And I think he referred at least 18 times during Trump's term to Trump and his broad-shouldered leadership, which was weird. I mean, he totally worked at it. And he, you know, I don't think he stood up to him once until the bitter end, right? And the bitter end was he certified the electoral college votes that were counted in the in Congress that on January 6th, and that, you know, won him the ire and the grudge of Donald Trump for probably forever, and almost got him hung. I mean, you know, we all remember this.
So, right.
You know, there's a whole conversation now. I mean, how much credit does Mike Pence deserve for doing that, given what he enabled up to that very point? You know, I'm of the belief that two things can be true at once. I mean, I think he did the bare minimum, but the bare minimum happened to be important at a very, very kind of pivotal moment in our history. So, you know, hats off to Pence. But I also think, whoa. And even to this point, I mean, he never criticizes him. He's he's the ultimate lapdog. So
still,
look, he still is. So I don't know. I don't know how far it's going to get him in this Republican Party, given the grudge that Trump is holding against him. But, you know, he's got to live his life, too.
How about Bill Barr? Is he a white hat or a black hat?
Still. Oh, boy. Again, bare minimum guy. I mean, you know, it's nice that he stood up at the end. It's nice now that he has been willing to testify before the January 6th commission. Apparently, you know, he was extremely harsh against Trump in his memoir. Always be nice if they could do this before they get their big book deals to actually speak out.
Right.
And also, you know, he's one of these people who, when asked, he, you know, will you support the nominee in 2024? And he said, I'd be shocked if I didn't support the Republican nominee.
Right.
So he doesn't rule out supporting Trump, which to me is quite a tell, right? I mean, I still can't believe when people do that. And, you know, pretty much only Liz Cheney and Kinzinger
Right. I was just going to say the one exception that you do talk about, and you interviewed her several times, is Liz. She's not going to vote for Donald Trump.
No, she isn't. I mean, she did in 2020. I mean, you know, she said she regretted it immediately. I mean, I believe her, but I mean, it took her a while too, but I mean, now that she's flipped, I mean, she's flipped wholeheartedly and I think has done it quite courageously. And I get a little impatient with liberal friends who say, oh, how can you even, you know, have any respect for Liz Cheney after Iraq, after her father did this? And that. I mean, it's like, my feeling is when you have sacrificed as much as she has, and she'll probably lose her job over this, and certainly she'll never be Speaker of the House and so forth. And when you have paid such a price within your party and have lost so many friends, and you are on, you know, what you consider to be the right side of an issue, and I consider to be at the right side of an issue, you should be praised. So, I wish people would, I wish people on the left would lay off Liz Cheney, or at least, you know, maybe stop talking about something that happened a long time ago. So anyway, I have great respect for her. I wish there were more of her in the Republican Party. I don't expect her to, you know, agree with Joe Biden like ever. And that's fine. That's why we have two parties. But I think that, when there is courage being shown, you should give the person credit.
Mark, your book starts out in the lobby of the Trump Hotel, which I admit I have visited on two occasions. Mm. Do you miss the hotel, Mark? That was a big part of your life, dude.
You know, purely for, you know, I have to say, I mean, the Trump Hotel was bizarre. I mean, the Trump Hotel was, and I get into this a fair amount in the book. I mean, it was the center of Washington. I mean, it was Republican Washington. And it was like Rick's Cafe. It was like, you know, just like Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, it was like, you had these Republican congressmen running around, and you'd have members of the administration, you know, Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, lived there. Rudy was there all the time, you know, always going out to smoke a cigar. I mean, it was quite a scene. I mean, McCarthy would go in, you know, Graham would be going from table to table being trailed by, you know, these foreign lobbyists, you know, trying to get a meeting with the boss down the street. And you know, a lot of reporters would go there, myself included, because you get a lot of work done. Because, I mean, you know, his people were there and they were out in public and they were usually a little drunk and you could pick up a lot of stuff. So I
and then Trump would show up.
Trump would show up, you know, more than once in a while. I mean, he that was literally the one place outside of the White House where he would agree to go to dinner. you know, he had to be a big Trump property. He needed the big applauded entrance. I mean, it was the ultimate safe space. He would go to the BLT Prime Steakhouse. He would order a 40-ounce tomahawk steak, well done, a shrimp cocktail, fries, apple pie or chocolate cake for dessert, unlimited buckets of Diet Coke chilled just so. I mean, how this guy remained alive for 4 years, or, you know, still, or how our democracy remains alive, I'll never know. But yeah, and it was quite a scene. Like, people would be standing on their chairs applauding. It'd be like,
oh God,
you know, tin pot dictator stuff. And it was like the ultimate scene. So yeah, now I don't miss it, but you know, and that scene sort of was played out. You know, the coronavirus certainly probably ruined the business.
Right.
Then he lost, which was not on brand. So it was kind of a ghost town there at the end. So occasionally see your Marjorie Taylor Greens in there.
But yeah. as you point out, he ended up selling the hotel for $100 million more than he paid for it. So kind of doesn't that sort of sum up the entire Trump presidency?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of a even age-old Washington thing. I mean, it's failing upward, right? I mean,
right.
Yeah, not only does like this abandoned place. I mean, look, in fairness, I mean, it's at the old post office building. It's a beautiful place. It's a nice building, nice location. So, I mean, I guess in real estate or hotel real estate, it's a desirable place. But yeah, I mean, the place was doing miserably at the end. I assume was losing a ton of money, and he got $100 million profit. And also, I mean, it's emblematic of politics when you can fail upward by getting impeached twice and getting booted out of office and starting an insurrection and losing the House and the Senate and the White House, and still, you know, sort of wake up a few weeks later as the front runner for your party for the next time around. I mean, people are kissing his ring and stuff.
And pocket $100 million. So I know you're on a tight new book schedule here, Mark Leibovitz. So you just touched on the question I want to leave you with, and that is, where does all of this go now? Will Trump, do you believe, run for re-election in 2024, and will any Republican dare challenge him in the primary?
Yeah, I think he'll run because that's what he does. What else is the guy going to do? I think, I think someone will probably challenge him, and I think he will win. I think right now he's got about half the party still in his pocket. That's going to probably get him there, because I assume it'll be a multi-candidate field. And we know what Trump does. If Trump has something in front of him, he's going to try to take it. And we know what the Republican Party right now does, which is nothing. So I think the same dynamic is basically in place. And I think we might be stuck with him if he's able to remain healthy. And, we're all here in a few years. So, buckle up. It should be really fun, huh?
Mark, later in the week, we're going to have the final hearing, we think, of the January 6th committee about what Donald Trump did on January 6th. I just want to point out that I learned from your book something I've never seen reported anywhere else, and that is Stephanie Grisham, former top aide to the First Lady, and then she became press secretary, never held one press briefing, by the way. But she said that on that day, sitting in the dining room off the Oval Office, watching what was happening at the Capitol, Donald Trump kept saying, quote, "Look at all those people fighting for me."
Isn't that amazing? Yes.
It is.
It's like, look, and I sort of dwelled on that. And I mean, Stephanie Grisham, I mean, a lot of people sort of dismiss her outright. And yeah, it's easy to do that. But I mean, she at least she told the truth. And, you know, I assume she testified before the committee, probably privately. But yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating dynamic. And it's just really kind of sad. But that's to me, it sort of goes to the kind of warp psychology that we're dealing with here.
Yeah, we saw the worst of America. Donald Trump saw what he believed to be the best of America, as you point out in the book. The book, again, is Thank You for Your Servitude. It's just out. It's a great book, very important read. Again, a link to buy the book on the episode notes of this podcast. Mark Leibovitz is the author. Mark, thank you so much. Congratulations, and thanks for spending so much time with us today.
Bill, always a pleasure. Thank you. Gratitude. Gratitude. I'll see you soon. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And that's a wrap with Mark Leibovitz. Again, the book is Thank You for Your Servitude. Can't recommend it too highly. Lots of great stuff in there by Mark Leibovitz. And a link to buy your copy of the book you'll find in the episode notes to today's podcast. Now, we'll be back on Friday with our roundtable, and I can't wait, because Thursday evening is the final hearings, so far as we know, of the January 6th Select Committee. They're going to be focusing on what Donald Trump was doing
in the Oval Office for 3.5 hours while his gang of armed supporters was attacking the United States Capitol. Mark Leibovitz talks a lot about this in his book. We'll be watching the hearing Thursday night and then talking all about it with our political reporters on the roundtable on Friday. You won't want to miss the hearing. You won't want to miss the roundtable. So take care of yourself. Have a good week. Come back and see us on Friday with the roundtable on the next edition of the Bill Press Pod.